This is Technical Difficulties on Resonance 104.4 FM. I am your host, Tim Abbott. We have with us in the studio Nick Wilsden from our good friends at Drake Music, who pop up sporadically on our airwaves to discuss accessibility in music in general and what exactly has been going on since we last spoke to guys from the organisation and the illustrious Marlo Donato. So, Nick, welcome to Resonance 104.4 FM.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
When we last met was in a masterclass run by the aforementioned Miss Donato.
That's right, yeah.
And she was broadly experimenting with electronic devices in order to see if there were ways that people could make music when they thought that there was an impairment that was preventing them from doing it. And you were facilitating that. You were actually plugging and unplugging things. And
yeah, I'm behind the scenes plugging everything into everything else and, trying to create, I suppose, different approaches to making music. A large part of what I do for Drake Music is it's quite technical, but it's also quite experimental. It's let's plug some things in and see what works. And very interesting approach to doing things. And it's, the key thing, I suppose, as with all Drake Music stuff, is musical excellence. We're aiming for good music. We're not aiming for music therapy. We're not aiming for anything else. We're aiming for making music. And that's, I suppose, for me, a very important point, but I think for the organisation as well.
It reminds me of conversations I've had with Paralympians and people in the Paralympic movement before, particularly around the difference between Special Olympics and Paralympics, and that their argument was that they are an elite sports organisation, and that's the point. Their point is to enable good sport. You can pick up an instrument and make a horrible racket with it, or you can just, mess around, but that's not necessarily the same thing. Not the same thing as creating music.
Well, this is absolutely it. And, for us, there's key aims, for us. One of them is, to aim for high-level music making, but also on an inclusive level as well. So, we're not talking about disabled musicians performing as disabled musicians separate from all other musicians. We're talking about all musicians performing. So it's, looking at it in that approach, we're just about music making. I suppose my background is quite technical and I'm very into all sorts of different devices and gadgets. And the way I approach working for Drake Music is exactly the same. It's just, how can we make music, and arguably not everyone likes the results. They sometimes get a little too experimental, but I'm happy to go there.
So back in that masterclass, let's just describe some of the things. Back in the masterclass, there were these various ways of facilitating noise, in a broad sense. When Marlo came into the studio the other day, a while back now, before that masterclass, we were discussing the theory of her masterclass, but what exactly was there for people to experiment with, and how did the different things that you used facilitate music making?
Okay, so the equipment we brought along was very much, I suppose, an array of standard equipment that we use. So it's our sort of traditional box, as it were. One of the main bits that we've used quite frequently is the sound beam. Let's describe the sound beam on radio. The sound beam looks like a red torch, but what it is actually an ultrasonic proximity sensor. So rather than sort of addressing it, you move your hands in front of it. So it's kind of like a big invisible piano. And as you move along, you can play different notes on it. Can be quite an abstract instrument to grasp, but once you're in front of it, it's quite intuitive. It's once you realise that there's nothing for you to actually physically touch, there's no tactile aspect of it, then it's quite engaging. Some of the other elements we use are switches, which are controlled various different things. A lot of what we use is mechanical adapting things, you know, what we call the magic arm. So it's kind of like a multi-directional microphone stand, so you can get things in good positions that are comfortable for people. The key one, Velcro. Velcro is an indispensable tool. It's getting things where you want them and then making sure they stay there is
the key
part.
I remember that discussion, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So yeah, that was what we brought along. In terms of what went on, a lot of it was about introduction. I mean, one of the things we're doing with Drake Music, we've always worked with people of all ages, so you know, we're always happy to do that. But we found that increasingly people assume that we just work with disabled young musicians. Well, actually, we don't. And so part of the masterclass was about that, was actually sort of opening up and going, look, we do actually work with all disabled musicians. We're here to work with everyone. And I'm not entirely sure why people make the assumption it's only young musicians that we work with. But, you know, that was kind of opening the door. And so it was sort of showing people what's out there. And, you know, there's obviously various people who attended the masterclass we followed up a relationship with and have been able to develop some of their music making activities as a result of that. The nature with all assistive music technologies is it's always bespoke. So whilst the equipment I've described there, you know, it gives you an idea, how you actually use that depends on the individual. You know, it's a key point.
I was reminded that the at one point the table was laid out with pressure pads that were individual chords, I think, off the piano. And I got into a discussion about the nature of playing the piano, because I did do piano lessons as a kid, and I was born with a congenital hemiplegia, so I was never able to do it properly. And so it astounds me that we ever tried it as a family. But I did, and then gave up because there was no point. I say there was no point. Obviously not strictly true. From what you've just been saying, it is true. From what Marlo said when I said to her, look, I can't do this, I can't play half the notes. She pointed out that the black notes at the top, that she said that those are the bass line in tracks. It's like a bass player in a band. And I said, so just sack the bass player. And so, yeah, that is an expression that stuck in my mind. And so I think if I ever go back to music playing, I will sack the bass player.
It's something that, I mean, my approach is, I suppose, from a more personal point of view, I'm generally fascinated with sound. Now, fortunately, quite a lot of the sound I make ends up being musical, but not all of it. And it is about that sound creation. And for me, that, you know, can come from anything from a traditional instrument to, you know, drumming your fingers on the table. It can be anything of that. And I suppose the musicality comes into how you do it. But yeah, I'm sort of fairly open to everything as musical instruments, which is something I suppose we reached as a point of contention, is a lot of the equipment we use is incredibly musical and requires an incredible amount of dexterity to use. However, it's quite often not recognised as a musical instrument. I mean, this is something that we've quick plug for you, but we've actually just launched on our website, the Drake Music Education. Now, this is actually kind of more just opening up a platform for discussion about this, because there are all these different techniques for making music with assistive technologies, and actually trying to almost, yeah, get some sort of coherence out of it. How do we, you know, do that? And that sort of has got to come out of a discussion from it. And so, yeah, we've set up a platform on our website for discussing that, and trying to actually formalize it more and get, you know, professional bodies to recognize it and accredit it, because it is these incredibly diverse ways of performing, and it is quite a tricky thing to accredit, because everyone's playing a different instrument all of a sudden, you know. None of them is any more or less musical than the other, but they're all different. So there is no formal definition of what this instrument is. You have to get to understand it before you can assess it. And that's, I suppose, a barrier that we come against.
So you've spoken about Drake Music Education as a something that you're doing that you weren't doing before. What's going on with projects at Drake Music in general?
Okay, there's quite a few exciting things. One of the projects which I really enjoyed took place recently at the Rhythm Factory. That was called Turn the Tables. Now, that was an accessible DJing project. So it was working with both traditional DJ equipment and all sorts of different assistive ideas that we were sort of prototyping. A colleague of mine at Drake Music has made a nice touchscreen interface for DJing that's quite exciting. And then using some of our standard equipment. And yeah, the key thing I suppose for us about that is that it's working again with adults, and we're trying to reach, I suppose, particularly young disabled adults, because it seems that it's something that's quite hard to get access to that community, and there are plenty of people out there, and when we can find them, there's a lot on offer and we can have a lot of fun doing music workshops. But this is something new, and so we were really pleased. We had a great turnout for that, and you know, there's all sorts of exciting plans in the pipeline for returning to Turn the Tables. There's a lot of things that we're currently fundraising for, which should be really, you know, really thrilling about that. So I'm looking forward to more of that. Another thing that's in the pipeline, I have to be careful, my knowledge is limited on this, but we've worked in the past in collaboration with an organization, Further Field, who are a brilliant organisation. I believe they've got another show on the station, which is, you know, a fascinating show about all sorts of technical things. So we're really pleased to be working with them again. But we're actually looking to develop a sort of research and development area. So this addresses some of the things I've talked about the need for research in the area. So we're actually going to develop as a project we've got in the pipeline called WeShare, which is going to be sort of a completely sort of back and forth sharing between the two organisations, and trying to, you know, we've always been trying to keep on the front, you know, cutting edge of things, and it's to keep us up to speed and to also feed into them as well. So it's a really collaborative project with a lot of exciting things coming with that too. I was fortunate enough to be with Stephen for the launch of the OMI competition. I think, you know, he'll talk about it a little later, but the Ars Electronica launch of it. And I suppose actually some of the other panel members had some incredibly insightful things to say, as far as I'm concerned, about the definition of a musical instrument. But one of the things that stuck in my mind was one of the panelists, Peter Purgatov, has said, and he asked the question about musical instruments is, what is it that makes you return the next day to play it? What makes you return the day after that? And then in 1 year's time, why are you coming back? Why are you still working with this instrument? And in 10 years' time, why are you coming back? And quite a lot of the assistive technologies involve being developed. And I suppose that's the difference. You're constantly adjusting, tweaking and changing it, whereas traditional classical instruments, they're all there. The challenge is presented by that instrument and there is no tweaking. It's just about you and this other instrument, and you have to learn that instrument. Whereas the assistive ones, there is a lot of adaptation and you have to make them more sophisticated as the player progresses. So there's a slight difference in the approach, and I think that's inherent in technology generally. But it's quite an interesting thought. What's making you come back to this? Why do you want to play this? And that's, you know, as you say, Stephen has set the sights incredibly high, and rightly so. I think it's a great thing to set them at such a professional level. There is these shifts in technology, so, you know, it can be continually developed. One thing that I guess I find particularly relevant is that the difference between the standard assistive technology used by organisations like Drake and the technology available to participants at the Ars Future Lab, there is a big gulf. And there's a reason there's a gulf. The time to develop these instruments, it's incredibly time consuming. And to build that into a funding bid is unrealistic. To say, well, actually, we're going to take 6 months building an instrument and it's going to be perfect for one person. But after that, there's another 10 participants who we've completely ignored. You know, it doesn't make sense in a funding bid, but there are these people working with incredibly sophisticated technologies, developing exciting things. And I suppose, yeah, that's what hopefully OMI is going to do, is generate this excitement amongst these people who have access to it and the time to develop, and really challenge them and say, look, let's make something. Let's make it completely adaptable. Let's make it, you know, completely comparable with a professional, you know, traditional orchestral instrument. And I think, you know, that's a great challenge to set, and it seems like quite a few people are rising to it already. There were certainly some good discussions that followed the talks, so hopefully there'll be some great results out of it.
Well, I look forward to talking to him about it more as it develops, actually. Nick Wilsden from Drake Music. thank you for coming in.
It's been a pleasure, Tim. It's great to be here. Look forward to hearing more from you guys as well.
How do people get hold of you if they think that any of what they've just heard fits what they are or want to do?
Okay, so a couple of ways you can get hold of us. One of the good ones to check out is our website, which is www.drakemusic.org. On there you can find access to all the Drake Music education. So if you've got specific experiences to do with working with music in the classroom, with all sorts of assistive technologies, any experience of that, do get involved with the discussion. We're really trying to get that going, and we've got lots of exciting things happening already. Likewise, disabled musicians, get in touch, share your experiences and your tips and tricks as well, because I know there's lots out there. And more particularly, if you've got inquiries about the Drake Music education, there's an email address specifically for that, which is dmed@drakemusic.org.
This is Technical Difficulties on Resonance 104.4 FM. I am Tim Abbott. Last week, I was joined here at 144 Borough High Street by the Birmingham-based Stephen Hetherington from the One-Handed Musical Instrument Project. Now, I can think of school projects where you create an instrument which you could probably passively play with one hand, but this is not that. So where do the boundaries lie between that, and what exactly is the point of this project?
The object is not to create a musical instrument per se, that is any musical instrument. Anything which you can make sound with, you could use as a musical instrument. The object is to create an instrument which can emulate an orchestral instrument. That's the really difficult challenge. That is to say, if you have an impairment, a motor impairment in a hand or arm, at the moment you cannot play an orchestral instrument. That means billions of people across the world who have these impairments, even a mild impairment, are prevented from participating in music making with each other. That's what we want to overcome. That is the challenge. But that means that if you pick up a violin or a trumpet, and or if you go through every single orchestral instrument, they all require two hands. Now, I'm sure your listeners will be sent moment thinking, I'm sure I can think of one that doesn't, but I think that you're wrong, that absolutely none of them can be played with one hand. That is, to a decent standard. You can play a trumpet to a very elemental standard, but you can't play it to a high standard. So the prospect is, can we create a musical instrument that you can perform without the use of one hand or arm, and that can emulate an orchestral instrument? You can sit alongside orchestral players, play the music just as they do, and participate in mainstream music making.
And therefore the point is to bring people like myself with one usefully functioning arm into a situation where they could purposefully sit down in an orchestral pit and take part in a performance with other players who weren't disabled.
Exactly so. Exactly so. That's the target of it. And these instruments have to be unlimited. They have to have the same potential for virtuosity as current orchestral instruments. They have to sound the same so that they're not distorting the sound of the orchestra. It's actually simply expressed, but technically extremely difficult to achieve. I mean, probably the easiest approach to it in one sense is through mechanical manipulation of existing instruments. So you make a flute or an oboe or a saxophone, which are the most common instruments for this. You adapt it so all the keys can be reached by one hand. But in fact, it produces mechanical difficulties as well in doing that. But at least the output is still responding to the same kind of input, that's the human body, that it currently does, particularly through a reed or the embouchure. Much more difficult in other instruments. But there is also a whole other set of possibilities. For the first time, this period in which we live has advanced electronics far enough that we think it's possible to give different kinds of input and produce exactly the right kind of output. Now, it's easy in one sense. It's easy in the sense that you can make a sound electronically that sounds exactly like any old instrument. Google did it, I don't know if you noticed, a couple of months ago. They had a really brilliant, their logo on Google was a guitar, and you could, with your cursor, strum the strings, and it sounded absolutely brilliant. The sound files, as it were, are fine, very sophisticated, and very capable of manipulation. What isn't yet at a standard that can work is the input. How do you change, say, the trumpet embouchure, the lips, the breath, the pressure? How do you enable some other part of the body to give that kind of sensitive and responsive input in which you can then manipulate into a predictable output?
How do you do that? I mean, that's the challenge, but is it a question of software? Is it a question of materials?
It's all of this and a lot more. It's going to be quite an interesting collection of responses, I think, we get from the competition. It's certainly the range of people that are interested to compete so far do include people like MIT scientists, even talking to a group from CERN the other day about it. We've had a particle physicist from NASA talking to us about it. But equally, we've had the science sectors through cognitive technology, and that's sort of part of robotics. They've shown interest, but it goes right the way down to people that just make ordinary instruments at the moment, standard instruments, who are interested to know in themselves whether they can meet the challenge of producing something that can work with that one hand and arm.
There are two categories. There's a practical one. That's a category for the best example of an instrument that can emulate. But there's also a category for the most promising solution to the challenge.
That's right. Well, we don't think that this is going to happen quickly. So what we're proposing is the most useful thing. Well, let's take a step back. The competition is there to try and get an end result. And this will run for years and years. So we'll be hoping that we'll get developing results that will all kind of stand on each other and progress as the years go on. But given that it takes quite a while to get through this, we've made it a two-stage process. So each process is 2 years long, although we start a new process every year. At the end of the first year in that process, we will give an award to the most promising ideas and technology and concepts to help them develop it. And the second year, they have to come back with an instrument. But at the same time in that second year, there's another start of a first year lot. So we're giving two sets of awards every year.
And the awards, this is Ars Electronica?
We're doing them in cooperation with Ars Electronica in Linz, which you may know is really responsible for the world's most prestigious awards in creative technology. It's a really fantastic operation they have there.
Quite a fantastic place to go as well. And unfortunately,
very exciting.
I mean, Linz being the city that it is, it possibly doesn't get as visited as much as it should.
No, I think that's true. It's extraordinary that this enterprise should park itself there on the banks of the Danube and really dominate the city's culture. It's an extraordinary institution, Ars Electronica.
From the Ars Electronica base, you've also got set up deals with orchestras with the aim of performing this piece at the end.
Yes, we formed a partnership quite early on with the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, and we're doing the same with the Bruckner Orchestra in Linz. And the object is, yes, exactly as you say, that when we get instruments which are of sufficient quality, we hope that they will be performed in the orchestra, and we'll give performances on them. Hopefully, what we really like to do is to perform a concerto, so it's really out there right in front, and we can see what it can do.
Okay, so you've said this is a long-term project. Is there any eventual end date for it? Is it just going to continue until the point where the panel is satisfied that this has actually happened?
I think this reminds me of this competition where there's robots competing for the World Soccer Championship. And they reckon they can build, well, the challenge is to build a robotics team that can beat the world, real live World Soccer Champions by 2050. It's not looking as if they're going to get there. I feel a little bit the same, that I think we'll get some very, very good and imaginative and fascinating instruments, many of which could well end up in common use, not necessarily sitting side by side others in the orchestra, but on their own account. I think we'll get some extraordinary and wonderful things out of it. How long it will take to produce an instrument that really can, you really can sit among the violins or the oboes, that's a much, much longer challenge, and I think it will take us a long time.
If musicians are listening to this who Well, actually, I'll rephrase that. You might not have to be a musician. If you're listening to this and thinking you can construct this instrument, whether or not you've read the rules, where do you go for all that information so that you know where you can go next?
Well, the first stop I'd suggest is our own website, which is www.ohmi, that's O-H-M-I, onehandedmusicalinstrument.org.uk. But the Ars Electronica site will also have all the entry forms and all the details on it as well. They will actually be running the competition, administrating the competition.
Which I believe is AEC.AT.
It is. If you do that, you get the German version, but there's a little flag in the top and you can change it to English.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you for coming in and joining us on Resonance 104.4 FM Technical Difficulties, Stephen Hetherington.
Great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks to Annie Lewandowski for a brief inspirational conversation a while back on the subject of one-handed instruments. Thanks to Marlo Donato for being a mistress of the masterclass, and for the Technical Difficulties crew, I am Tim Abbott. Wear your scars with pride. And remember, we all have technical difficulties. Now, a great illustration of how you play an instrument one-handed. This is Def Leppard with their one-handed drummer Rick Allen and the band's Undefeated. Until next week, goodbye.
In these eyes don't lie. And they say that if you don't blink, then you don't die. Now feel this heart, it beats so tough. And if you ever gonna doubt my faith, then I'll call your bluff. 'Cause you ain't that tough. But there ain't nothing you can say.